Peter Bach, thanks so much for joining me this morning.
It's my pleasure.
So you wrote an op-ed with Robert Kocher in the New York Times a few months ago, and you had a sort of a counterintuitive suggestion for getting more doctors to go into primary care. What was your suggestion?
Well, the economics of medical education and medical practice are heavily skewed towards doctors becoming specialists. And the reason is that doctors have to mostly pay for their own medical education. It costs a lot of money, hundreds of thousands of dollars. The vast majority of doctors graduate with a sizable amount of debt. And then they have to make a choice between going into primary care, which is relatively less well compensated, or becoming a subspecialist, which is better compensated. And because of the burden of the debt, many of them feel dragged, pushed, or financially encouraged to become specialists. The usual approach to solving this problem, which is manifest by a ratio of specialists to primary care doctors that's different from most other countries, is to try and find a way to pay primary care doctors more, to essentially equalize their incomes with that of specialists. Bob Kocher and I don't view that as particularly viable. It's extremely expensive to do it, and it doesn't make a lot of economic sense either. What makes more sense is what we proposed, which is that people should be able to graduate from medical school debt-free and become primary care doctors. And if they did that, you know, they wouldn't have a debt burden that would drive them to seek higher wages. But if they want to go into a subspecialty where they will make more money, they essentially could pay for the additional training to get there. So the basic idea is, instead of charging people for medical school, everyone goes to medical school for free. If somebody wants to subspecialize, they basically pay for the additional training to get to that higher wage bracket.
Yeah, and I mean, everyone would love to get something for free. I mean, I'd love to have gone to grad school without paying for it, without having loans now. But you argue also that this is actually sort of something that would be workable and that wouldn't cost more. That would be a lot cheaper than, like you said, trying to raise the wages of primary care doctors.
Yeah, the way the math works today is it would be, in policy speak, budget neutral. Taking away the salaries of people during their subspecialty training almost perfectly pays for all medical school tuition in the United States. So we wouldn't have to use tax dollars, if you will, to get there.
And you mentioned the National Health Service Corps in your op-ed. You mentioned also that a lot of states have programs that forgivable loan programs. Missouri has a program called Primo, which does that. Do you think that's not enough, or do you think it doesn't work well enough?
Well, there's two answers. Three. The first is that our program doesn't preclude other sorts of incentive programs for people going to practice in rural areas. It doesn't preclude Medicare from, in fact, we said nothing about Medicare having to change the way they add a bonus payment to people who practice in professional shortage areas. But the problem is, you know, the facts on the ground show that those approaches alone are not working to ensure that we have enough primary care doctors. We don't, and the numbers are dwindling. I think I recently heard of a high-profile medical school having an entire graduating class where not a single doctor went into primary care. And the last is that, you know, our view of this is that doctors should be able to make the decisions about what they want to do and what they want to specialize in as they become more and more educated. And our approach is that they would finish their primary care training, and at that point, that's when most people decide to specialize or not, and they could make that decision at that point without any handcuffs, if you will, that some of the loan forgiveness programs have, like the military program that, you know, you have to enroll in the military to have your medical school paid for, and then you have to pay them back. There's nothing wrong with that, but it doesn't solve the primary care doctor problem.
And talk a little bit more about the primary care doctor problem. You also talked in your op-ed about why getting more people to go into primary care would help larger problems within the healthcare system in the United States.
The reorganization of care that we are trying to achieve, not only through the recent legislation, but just in general, both sides of the aisle agree that a more coordinated care approach where patients have a doctor who understands their variety of problems and, if you will, quarterbacks their care, is going to be a path towards having better quality and hopefully lower costs. The people who are best suited to that role are primary care doctors who have a broad array of expertise, and we simply do not have enough of them right now for them to play an important and major role in most patients' lives. And if you look at the trends, as I mentioned, we have med schools graduating, you know, zero primary care doctors in some cases, and we have a growing population of older people where most of the, you know, disease is concentrated, and they need doctors.
What kind of response have you gotten from this proposal? Do, you know, some of your colleagues think you're crazy, or have people been receptive?
You know, there's always a little bit of "you're crazy, the world doesn't work that way" kind of stuff. But I actually think that this has been an example where we've gotten a very warm reception to the idea, certainly from the societies and professional organizations that think about medical education and are concerned about the workforce problems. Both sides of the aisle have reached out to us, as well as the administration. I think people were very surprised, and the truth is we were a little surprised, that the math worked out without people having to literally pay out of pocket for their specialty training. We had first anticipated that specialists would have to actually have to pay a small amount, but in fact all they have to do under current conditions is to forego their stipend for their years of specialty training. There's a little bit of pushback from specialists, but I'm a specialist, and the truth is that I've run the numbers for myself, and had I not had to pay for my medical school, then I would have ended up taking out loans of approximately equal size during my specialty training when I was being paid, and I would have been in about the same place.
And what are some of the obstacles to actually changing the way we pay for medical school and moving to a system like this? It seems like there's a lot of moving pieces that would have to really be changed to get there.
I don't think it would take that big an effort. I mean, there's obviously not one central entity controlling the payment of specialists as they undergo their training or controlling the payment of medical schools and tuitions. These are essentially private, independent entities that don't interact in a financial way. So some third party, probably a, you know, public-private partnership or an entity set up by the Council of Graduate Medical Education in conjunction with the Organization of Medical Schools, would have to be set up so essentially these funds could travel from the place they sit right now, which is mostly in hospitals, funded by the Medicare program to support the training of specialists, and flow instead into the coffers of medical schools to offset tuition costs. Those two things are not the same. In some cases, they're in related organizations, but you would need a way to cost to move the money and keep track of it, and you would also need a way to ensure that medical schools wouldn't raise their tuition rates without limit now that there is a third party paying those costs. But those are doable things. We have looked at the legislation, and we see no impediment to using the Medicare dollars in that way. And we also believe that there's sufficient congressional interest that if there were a legislative obstacle, that maybe it could be addressed.
As you're aware, I'm sure there's a shortage as well of doctors in many rural parts of the United States, especially primary care, of course, because that's what most rural doctors do is primary care. How would this affect doctors going into rural practice?
Our proposal doesn't specifically discuss or contemplate the distribution of primary care doctors across the country. One would hope that, you know, a rising tide would raise all boats. If we had more primary care doctors at some level, we'd have more primary care doctors everywhere. More importantly, we actually think an approach that essentially would give people medical school for free if they would qualify for acceptance would really open up the opportunity to become a doctor to lots of people who don't do it today because just the economics seem too daunting. Individuals, prospective doctors who come from lower socioeconomic status groups, or who are otherwise have less access to higher education, tend to be shy about pursuing careers in medicine. And the prediction would be that people from rural communities, if given the opportunity to have medical school education for free and be paid to become primary care doctors like we pay them today, you know, with a stipend, would be more interested then in pursuing a career like that and hopefully returning to their communities in some larger numbers than they do today.
Would there be any unintended consequences, you know, applicants flooding medical schools because it would be easier to get into, maybe people going into it without as much intention, not as intentional in terms of really wanting to be a doctor, but just thinking, hey, it's free. Do you think there would be any problems like that?
Well, that to me sounds like a boon. I mean, I'd be foolish to say there'll be no unintended consequences. There's never been an idea that didn't have some unanticipated problem. But that's actually exactly what we want. We actually want more competition. We want better people. We want more people to say, I can anticipate a career in medicine that's financially viable and professionally satisfying, and let them go compete for the slots. We'll just get end up the winners because we'll end up with better doctors. And, you know, I don't want to say that we need to drag more people from Wall Street or something like that, but, you know, for sure the best and the brightest in this country are not attracted to medicine the same way they were even a couple of decades ago. And the truth is, you know, many of the best and the brightest are now spending their time trying to figure out how to get people to click on internet ads or restructure a financial product, and society may be better served if they focus on finding ways to help the sick.
Great. Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate you making time to talk with me.
My pleasure.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Take care.